Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the N Plus One studios overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfurt. In this podcast, we explore the world of endurance multisport. If it has to do with swimming, biking, running, or any combination of the three, we are there. This week, we're going to talk a bit about overtraining. It seems to be either people aren't exercising at all during COVID or they're doing too much. Trying to find that in between. I'm your host, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. How are you today, Brian?
I'm phenomenal.
Yay! Glad to hear it.
It's like it is every week, man. There's just no other better word than phenomenal.
I haven't come up with one yet. I've been looking.
It's one of my favorites for the reason of you tell somebody you're phenomenal and it always sets them back because they're like, huh?
That's a very big word.
It has just a kind of a wow. Because most people just say, hey, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
They might say great if it's like
I'm doing great
really
today.
Exceptional
yeah.
day.
Exceptional is another good word. That I'm exceptional good. Today, but it people doesn't quite flow as well
I,
as phenomenal.
I say, I'm a functioning adult today, or attempting to be a functioning adult.
I've always wanted to go, man, this is like the worst day of my life. I'm so depressed. Thank you for talking to me.
Just to see people's horrified looks.
See how fast they can like, walk
oh,
away.
Oh, God, what did it's I like, ask
what did
for?
I do?
I shouldn't have asked.
I should not have said hello to him.
Whoops. Anything else going on besides being phenomenal? What's making today phenomenal?
Well, we got to swim today.
You got to swim today.
I got to swim today. The second or third time I've swam.
Since March.
It's still horrendous and horrible.
Oh, it didn't get any better?
I don't have a feel for the water. It's just not there. Not like it was before I left. I was really swimming well.
Yeah.
When this all hit. And I can feel myself churning through the water. It's not smooth. And I'm a good 5, 6, 7 seconds slower in the 100 than I was before. It's interesting how that happens. It's to be expected.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it any easier to accept.
Well, it's phenomenal that you're back in the pool.
It's good to be swimming again. It's been, it is good to swim again. I didn't know how that would work when we get back. You can stay away from it for a while. Do you really miss it? Do you not? Sometimes it's hard to say until you get back in there. It is enjoyable to swim again. Even if
it's just nice to do something different.
Even if it is a bit of a struggle bus, it is good to have swimming again.
Yeah. I mean, I swam, three times last week, but one of them wasn't the team. That was I got to go in an infinity pool. That was really cool.
Those are different. They're very different.
Very different. It was really, it was fun, but boy, for the first few minutes, I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't understand how this feels. I don't understand, but I don't know. It was an interesting experience.
It's kind of like being on a treadmill. What's kind of interesting if I were looking at it from a coaching standpoint or someone who wants to do open water or be a triathlete, it ends up being a great tool.
Yeah.
The way it works is you set a pace.
Mm-hmm.
They have a jet thing, but I believe they have a conversion to what that pace would be like in a pool.
I don't know what the conversion was. I just knew.
You can look them up.
I was at like 45 out of 100.
Out of 100.
Yeah.
I think there's a conversion for those numbers to like actual speed in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
What that can allow you to do is it can allow you to have a 20-minute set at a particular pace and help you to learn that pace. Stay in that pace for an extended period of time. That's always the problem in a pool swim and in most swims in general it's kind of like running, your pace falls off.
Right.
In swimming it falls off much faster because it's not a fitness issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a form issue.
Right.
Your form deteriorates in swimming pretty quickly.
Usually as soon as I touch the wall and turn around and go back. It's like, wow.
Well, yeah, the first 25
is awful.
The first 25 in a pool is always your fastest 25.
Yeah,
it's
awesome.
Not even close. It's when you're smoothest.
Mm-hmm.
You can begin to break down. You're not as smooth. A lot of things begin to happen as you go beyond that first 25, that first 50. The key is, and what makes good swimmers, that breakdown doesn't affect their speed as much.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to see, though. Anybody who swims, go out and start counting strokes. And not count strokes for a 50 or 100, but count strokes for like a 400 or 500.
Oh,
you'll find that, I know for myself, I might start out with 19, 20 strokes a length. Mm-hmm. I get to 400 or 500, I'm 21, 22. And the longer I swim, that becomes 22, 23 strokes.
Right.
And that means you're swimming slower.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes you more strokes to get the length. you probably haven't picked up your cadence in that time period
probably
either.
Not.
A lot of times that begins to fall off as well.
Yeah.
You get the double whammy of not moving your arms as fast and taking more strokes to cover the same distance.
Right.
Which is one of the advantages of a pool swim. It does give you it gives you something to work on. It gives you some variables to work on. You have time, number of strokes, a length of the pool. Because that tells you the two things. It tells you how fast you're going that length,
mm-hmm.
how many strokes. So you can begin to figure out how many strokes, what distance you can do with each stroke. If it takes me 25 strokes to go 25 yards, I'm averaging 1 yard per stroke. If I can do it in 12 strokes, now I'm doing 2 yards per stroke.
Mm-hmm.
That 2 yards a stroke is going to be faster than the person doing 1 yard a stroke.
Usually, yeah.
Unless the person doing 1 yard a stroke is stroking 3 times faster. Then they would be faster.
Yeah.
It becomes that battle of strokes versus your stroke rate, both of which are calculable, both of which are worked on, and helped you to maximize your speed potential.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of beginner swimmers actually have a stroke rate that's too low. It's very hard to get to a stroke rate that's too high. Keeping the professionals will go at 70, 80, 90 strokes per minute, which is incredibly fast and almost impossible for non-good swimmers
to
attain.
So the metronome thing,
mm-hmm.
that's what does the stroke rate. Okay.
Yeah, you can get the little metronome. Finnis has a great device for that
mm-hmm.
that'll allow you to work on a certain stroke count. You can set it to 66 strokes per minute.
That would be a good tool for that infinity pool because I was talking to the person that owned it. You know, she's very much a new swimmer. There's a lot to work on. But she was, asking about the drawbacks. She's like, what are the drawbacks? I'm like, you're never going to learn how to turn around, but if you're open water swimming, that's okay. Trying to figure out distance, I was like, you're going to have to do everything by time. Obviously, you can't do it by distance.
Yeah, the training comes, instead of doing sets and distance, you do sets and time.
Sets and time.
And you can use the tempo trainer for that, because I can set like a 30-second or a 15-second interval where it beeps every 15 seconds. So you could go like 4 beeps and then rest till the next beep, and then go four beeps and then rest.
That's a good idea.
There's some different things you can do time-based with a Finnis type device.
I may recommend that to her, because I didn't really think about that until you just mentioned it. Because I was just kind of swimming, and it's funny because on a treadmill, I'm really bad about, I'll hit the front with my feet all the time, and it's not necessarily overstriding, it's being afraid of flying off the back. And I was doing the same thing in the infinity pool. I kept on hitting the things that are going around, to make the jets. And I was like, oh, thank God, you can't really hurt yourself on those.
The other thing you could potentially do is do it stroke-based.
Mm-hmm.
Swim 100 strokes and then take a 15, 30-second break, do another 100 strokes.
Well, that's what I was kind of talking to her a little bit about.
80 to 100 strokes is roughly going to be 100 yards for a lot of people. It would help to know what your stroke rate is in a pool.
In the pool, yeah.
How many strokes it takes you to go a length, not only in that first 25, but at that 300, 400 mark, how many strokes are you taking a length? If I'm starting at 20 and I finish at 22 on a 400, well, now I can say, if I want to swim a 400 in one of these things, well, that's 20. You do the math to find out how many strokes that is. Then you just count those strokes, and that would probably give you a similar to what you would have in a pool.
Yeah.
If I'm 20 strokes per 25, then at 80, 82, I would stop, and that's pretty much equivalent of 100.
Mm-hmm.
Wait 15, 20 seconds and do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have some pre-existing data to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, you've got to be able to swim in a pool first.
But once you have that data, then you can do it. And then you just come back to the pool once every couple months to recalibrate.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe your stroke rate gets better. Maybe it gets worse. I don't know.
Yeah.
And you can recalibrate, and that's how you would use... Those are the two different ways I would use an infinity pool.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of similar to... It's a little bit harder to do that in open water because you can't really stop in open water easily.
Right.
That's why you, like, some of these techniques aren't going to work in open water, but it would work in an infinity pool, which is like open water, but shallow.
Yeah.
Infinitely shallow water. That would be really kind of nice for open water workouts if you had a long beach that was relatively shallow that you could do sets in.
Yeah. Well, and with open water, GPS watches, all that good stuff work. Yeah, the infinity pool, there was no way to figure out.
No, and you're never going to. All you can do is kind of estimate based on either time swimming or stroke mm-hmm. counts. Those would be the two I would use.
My Finnis seemed to estimate, I have no idea, for whatever, I can't remember how I had it set. I guess I must have had it set for lap. And it said how many yards I did, but I was like, yeah, it's probably wrong.
Well, it probably, when you stopped and started again, it probably thought you went off a wall.
Probably thought I went off a wall.
Because a lot of times that'll happen. If you swim like to the middle of the pool and hang out for a few seconds and then start swimming again, it'll count that as two laps.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it does, because we've done that a little bit in practice. Huh.
I mean, it can do that. Let's see. What else did we have happen this week? This was Father's Day, which was...
That's right. Happy Father's
Day. Yay, exciting. I got a Kantana. We were doing the reports in Asia at the end of the school year.
Right.
And we did this huge thing on katanas.
I actually got to sit there and watch National Geographic with you all and learn about one. I never did listen to Alex's report. I should have done that. Sorry.
We did a report on... Well, it had to be a persuasive thing. So I'm like, well, we could sell something. And we were looking at kind of the Japanese samurai and stuff. And that's where the whole concept of doing a report on the katana came from. It has to be persuasive. We'll sell something. Ours was pretty good. So we created our own own sword and showed how we made it. It was basically a report on how the ancient Japanese, and I guess to some extent to still today, how they went about making their swords for the samurai, which are different from the European swords quite a bit. The European swords tend to be a little bit longer. They're narrower. They're double-bladed, where the katana is one side blade. Just how they go about doing things was different. They also didn't have as good a quality steel in Japan, or they didn't have the... They were behind in the metallurgical side of it. So they would do things like they would lay out the metal in like sheets, like little, they look like little rice cakes. They would lay them on top of each other. Right. They melt it down into a block, and then they would fold it, put it into a block again, fold it, and they kept folding it, which allowed them to work through their impurities. And that's how they ended up with a fairly high quality sword that was fairly consistent throughout. But since they didn't really have good ways to make high quality steel, this is kind of how they went about making high quality weapons.
Sounds like it took forever.
Oh, yeah. I think it would take like weeks to make a sword. Because it took like 10 days to polish it down.
Oh, my God.
They'd have different layers of polish and stuff.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
There's like 15 people involved in making one sword, or even more.
Yeah. If you want a real katana from Japan, from the makers of them, it's something like a 6-week process.
Jeez.
And probably cost about 10 grand.
At least, yeah.
But it would be a pretty awesome sword. This was a replica sword they got me. It's an actual real sword.
Yeah.
It really cuts. We have a video of me cutting a watermelon.
I brought
in
the
half.
Watermelon.
And I actually swung too hard because I didn't know how hard you need to swing to go through a watermelon.
Right.
And apparently it's not very hard at all because I completely lost my balance on the backside of that swing.
It sliced it pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. The katana is an interesting weapon. It was a fun report, and I got one of those, so I've got my new home defense, which I may need because the guy who tried to kill me gets out on bail.
Is he out?
Yeah. He posted on Facebook and everything.
Oh, the loser.
Yeah, when
loose.
when they I guess went through the indictment process, they lowered his bail to like $10,000 in cash, and apparently his family somehow came up with $10,000 in cash, and he's been released, and he's out and posting on Facebook, which is always great now.
Now you can watch.
My wife
him on
is
Facebook.
On like high, even extra high alert until the trial goes through. And there's no telling when there'll be a trial. It could be months.
Oh my God, with COVID, yeah.
Could be months. Well, especially if the defense
drags it out, which they always do.
Which I assume they're going to try to do with depositions. My thing is like, okay. The prosecuting attorney really doesn't have that much evidence at this point. They have like my written statement and the evidence from the car, some pictures, and the testimony of the cops.
Right.
But they don't really have like our testimony or any other information that we may have from the whole incident. And, you know, 'cause there's a lot more to it than what I could write down that night on a piece of paper, which is all they really have at this point. They don't really have kind of the whole story. It was a very rough estimate of what happened.
Right.
And it really doesn't contain my wife's side of it either, where she interacted with him at some point as well. but they didn't get a really written statement. You know, so I'm trying to write this at 1 a.m. on a piece of paper relatively quickly. Doesn't quite capture the whole intent of all everything that happened that night.
No, the repercussions, shoot, you all have PTSD, and so do I, and I wasn't even here.
I'm actually not too bad, but...
You're not too bad.
It does make me nervous to go out at night sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is going down to when we go to swim at 5 a.m.
Because
I have to unlock our gate now
and
get out in my car in the dark in the summer. It's, that's a little creepy,
yeah,
by the way.
Need some big lights at the front of your driveway or something.
There are lights there.
But they're like the street lights, aren't they?
They're the street lights, and it's fairly bright. The problem is to some extent is the brightness. I'd almost be better off being dark.
Well, you need to shoot the lights. Like our house, our lights shoot down the driveway. You are blinded when you're coming up the driveway. I can see you.
Well, no, I get that, but at the end of the driveway where our gate is, the lights come down. The problem is once
to shoot.
Anytime you have ambient light,
yeah,
there's shadows.
Right.
And you can't see in shadows. That's always the problem. If it were dark, then I could better see in shadows, and you could see someone coming a lot easier.
Yeah.
Ambient light's really not good for situations where you don't know where someone is.
Work on that for you all so you can get out of your car safely.
Well, we're working on trying to get a real gate that has timers and that you can't get through, and you're not going to have to get out of the car to unlock, to open the gate and all that stuff.
Well, you can get the sensors and stuff. We'll see.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Yeah. Well, I had not nearly as much excitement as that, but I got to have the first experience of biking through, like, I've been caught in the rain on a bike before. I've certainly been caught in storms on running, but I got caught in that storm the other day on a bike. I can't believe I stayed upright. I still am floored by that.
That was a high wind one too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like 50-mile-an-hour gusts, and watching everything blowing in front of me. Thank God I got a new light on the front of my bike, so cars, because there were cars coming at us, and I was with one other person, and and that situation was like, okay, we're so close to home. Do we find a barn to go hang out in, or just muscle on through? We muscled on through, and I figured if lightning struck us, at least there was rubber underneath my.
You're probably not gonna get struck by lightning because you don't really have anything to ground you on a bike.
Yeah.
And the other nice thing about a bike in the heavy rain is you're not going to hydroplane. It's impossible to hydroplane on a bicycle.
My concern is getting blown off the bike and getting blown off the road.
Getting blown off the bike shouldn't be that big of a problem. Come on, bike handling skills.
Yeah, well, I got some more.
Actually, the bigger problem in rain that I've found is that it is much harder to see you for cars.
For cars, yeah. Yeah.
That's what makes biking in the rain.
Well, the person
dangerous.
That I was riding with was very annoyed that I had such a little light on the front, and he replaced it with this big, huge honking thing, and really glad he did now, because I was up front. He had much deeper wheels than me, and I was like, I don't know if he can stay upright. I'm going to do my best.
You can stay upright. With wind, it's a lot of it's about feeling it and leaning into against it.
Yeah.
But you've got to be paying attention. You've got to know kind of what's going on. I've ridden in 20, 30, 40 mile per hour. You get in the springtime when it gets windy as heck. I've ridden them in deep dishes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that bad. You just have to get used to it. Because if you're not used to it, it can feel really scary because it feels like you're out of control.
Yeah. Well, it was just sort of how long is this gust going to go? How I didn't want to be leaning into the wind and then all of a sudden it'd be gone. Let me tip over and...
That's what happens in those situations. There's a lot of, when you get into those wind situations, there's a lot of feel that's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Where that's why it's always good to go out on like the windy days when it's 20 and 30 mile per hour winds.
Right.
Just to practice, because you know it's going to be windy.
Yeah.
You know you're going to be in that situation. That way, when the winds get higher, you're better prepared for that environment. Because there is a lot of feel that's necessary of, you lean into the wind, and then you lean a little bit more, and then when it goes away, you're not going to ride in a straight line. Don't get me wrong.
No. There was no straight lines about it. I'm just like, kept on looking at the edge of the road going, oh my God, that's going to hurt if I go off there. Let's not do that.
But generally, you should be able to stay within a foot range
in
a situation, even with some pretty high winds.
I was probably in a foot either direction, so let's say 2 feet. Because you just got to swerve. You're leaning in, and it's like, okay, the wind's gone. Okay, swerve back and forth. It was wild. It was absolutely wild.
The problem was you were swerving into it. It's more like
Well, I wasn't swerving, but I don't know. I was trying to, anyway. I don't know.
It's very challenging because you have to
use
your...
One of those times I really wish I'd had a camera on my bike because I can't believe I rode through that and survived. I was like, oh,
oh, I hate riding in those rainstorms because you can't see anything. The rain just comes down.
Well, plus we'd done...
Then you
got to
clean your bike.
45 miles. I mean, we had like 2 miles to get back to the house.
Did you dry your bike and clean it?
I dried my bike, yeah.
Did you clean it?
I sort of. I mean, I got the sticks off the damn thing.
That's the biggest problem I have with riding in the rain is the cleanup afterward.
Yeah, some of my screws may be a little rusty, which is disturbing to me. But
fortunately, your bike's mostly carbon, so
yeah. So
it's just the screws that hold it together.
Just the screws that are holding it together, and those can be replaced if it really bothers me. But,
yeah.
But okay. Yes, no, I dried off the bike. I took all the lights off, drained all those. Took about a day and a half for my shoes to dry out. Well, I guess that was on Sunday, and I rode again Monday. And luckily, checked the shoes earlier in the day and stuck them out in the sun so they would dry out. My helmet finally dried out. I've got that aero helmet, sort of aero road helmet, and it's got the visor that sticks on with a magnet. And that was great. I mean, it actually, I got very little water in it. There's, you know, some vent holes and some water got in, but not too bad. I forgot, though, I need to, I need a Windex. Or no, what is
it? I always use Rain-X.
Rain-X, that's right. I need to Rain-X the
shield.
Eye shield.
That's if there's a race that's coming up that there's a chance it's going to rain, I usually will Rain-X my sunglasses before the race.
I definitely
it also helps
need to
with
that.
Some of the fogging issues that can happen.
That would have definitely helped if I'd had Rain-X. It did really well. I was better off with that than I would have been with sunglasses for sure. That was just very exciting.
It's always fun, especially when you start going down hills and high speed and heavy rains. And you go through those big puddles.
Most
people freak out at that situation because they think of their car and they're going to hydroplane and slide off the road, which doesn't happen.
The whole thing was a puddle, so I didn't really think about deep water because, I mean, it was just all being blown all over the place. So I didn't really think about that. It was wild. It was just wild. Very exciting. Whew, don't want to do it again anytime soon. All right. Well, our podcast today is sponsored by 3 Sport Endurance Coaching. 3SE is committed to our athletes no matter where they are in their athletic journey, whether they're brand new to one or all three of the triathlon sports or if they're experienced competitors. 3SE can develop a training plan to meet that athlete's needs and get them to the next level. If you're looking for a coach, check them out at go3sport.com. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about overtraining, which is something that a coach can really help you avoid if you do what they say. Right, Brian?
Yeah.
As I say, not as I do. That's my motto.
Well, that's what happens with every athlete. That's why I generally don't get too worked up when people go off the reservations. It's at this point, I just expect it to happen. I lay it out in a way that makes sense. It's not going to get you injured. And if you go above and beyond or do something different, we're adults.
Yep.
You're not 10. You don't need to be told what to do.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, good times. No, it can be a problem. Oh, I forgot to tell you that I broke my hand. I broke my finger last week.
Broke your finger. And?
On the other hand, I'm okay. I had to get a joke in.
You had to get a joke in. I'm sorry, we skipped over jokes. All right, give us another one. I know you got another one in there.
My boss asked me yesterday how good I was at PowerPoint. I excel at it. Boss looked at me and said, "Is that an Office Microsoft Office pun?" And I'm like, "Word."
That's awful.
Oh, good times, good times. Okay, one last one.
Okay.
What did one butt cheek say to the other?
What did one butt cheek say to the other?
Between you and me, something stinks. Okay.
That's a 9-year-old boy joke.
It's a 9. It's a dad joke, man.
It's a dad joke. Yeah.
No, our problem is nowadays, we've got a lot more time on our hand.
Yes, we do.
That was kind of our discussion when we were talking about eating. You get more time on your hand, you're not busy, you do things you wouldn't normally do in those situations. And the same thing's here. A lot of us are working from home. That's an hour, probably, maybe two for some people who would normally commute that time that you're getting back each day. You've got not as much going on socially. Theaters are just now starting to open back up.
Right.
Restaurants are kind of opening back up, but most people aren't going out and doing a ton of it because there's still a ton of restrictions. You have to wait in long lines, or it's just not as interesting socially. You're not getting out and doing as much stuff, which means you have more time on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for some people, they use that time to train some more.
I have to get out of the house. So they go run and they go.
Yeah, there's not as many places to go. There's not as many things to do. You've watched everything in the Netflix catalog.
Mm-hmm. Several
that's,
times.
That's interesting. And you get out and train more. You have more time to train.
And the weather's actually been great, too.
The weather's been pretty good. You have, and you just, there's more time. Usually you run into athletes and they're always like, well, I have time here to train. I have time here to train. And they're always trying to fit their training into their busy schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people have come into this and have a busier schedule, especially if you have kids that you have to manage now that you didn't previously. But that's not everybody. There's a big chunk of people out there that do have a lot more free time.
Yeah.
Which means they're out there not having to fit training in. Now they have extra time to train. Now they're fitting training into more things, which leads to what?
Overtraining.
And the big problem isn't so much that they're training as much as they are. The problem is they went from training X, which was, say, 10 hours a week, to now they're training 20 hours a week. And they did this jump within a month. And it's just too fast. Normally, we're talking about people are doing twice as much as they used to in a very compressed period, where that might take 4 or 5 months to get to that type of doubling.
Right. They're just
doing, you can do that for a short period of time, but now we're getting to that point where we're 2 or 3 months into this where people are starting to get injured. Yeah. We've seen this in other people out there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you've experienced.
I did previously, before COVID, when I trained very hard and qualified for Boston and then didn't take a break at all. And just sort of, I was like, okay, I've got all these other races and just doing all this other stuff. And then got into triathlon. And by the time the end of the year rolled around, when I had to start training for Boston, I didn't want to run. I didn't want to do it at all. I mean, it was a struggle to get out and do any of the workouts that I needed to do in order to survive the marathon. And then ended up with having some health issues with heart rate. Went bonkers. That was awful. That was really weird. And ran Boston and really have not run anything over like 8 miles since then. We're talking over a year.
Right. And now we add in people that use training to deal with stress.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're doing it more for that. You get people that are addicted to training that this feeds into as well.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have less breaks. That leads to bad things.
Yep.
That leads to plateauing. There's a lot of what are the side effects? You know the side effects.
A lot of the things to look for: heart rate, like going, not coming back down like it should.
Another one is heart rate won't go up when you train.
Yeah, yep.
You go hard, and your heart rate will just it'll go up. It'll be very slow.
Just not being able to sleep, which seems weird because you should be exhausted. But insomnia, also like decreased appetite when you think you should be hungry. All get-go because you're training so much and you're just not hungry. And the main one really is psychological. It's not wanting to train, but going and doing it anyway, and just not having any joy, any desire to go do it. And that was the big one for me. It's like, I just did not want to run, but I'm going to Boston. I have to run. Oh my God, this is like the only time I'm ever going to do this. And I don't want to do this. And I was depressed. I was mad. It was awful. And those are a lot of the big signs that you've been doing too much and need to take a break.
And that's really what we're here to talk about today. It's like, okay, what are these signs? What are the things that I need to look for? How should I manage this extra time?
Right. What can you do instead?
What can we do instead? For me, the big thing is you need to make sure you don't work out 7 days a week. That's one of the big no-nos that people do. They just continue to train 7 days a week. But I'm only running 3 miles a day, but you're doing it 7 days a week.
Yeah,
it's the same type of thing. I don't give my body a chance to rest.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not training for anything because there's no races coming up, I don't look at it from a periodical standpoint of I'm going to train for 3 weeks and take an easy week, or train for 2 weeks, take an easy week. People aren't thinking that way.
Right.
I mean, I'm not really thinking that way, to be honest.
Is
the same. We're not really building for anything. We're just out there training to train and just maintain fitness during all of this. And that can lead to problems of overtraining, because now instead of doing a building up the load and reducing the stress, we're just building up this load more and more. And that's when these signs of overtraining happens. That's when potentially injuries can happen.
Yeah. Yep.
The other thing I would recommend people to do is, instead of going out and running or going out and biking 7 days a week, take a day where you walk.
Mm-hmm.
Add walking into your running. A lot of people won't do that. Run for 5 minutes, walk for a minute or two. You're not going to go as far in that 30 or 45 minutes that you run, but your body will be much better off at the end of it.
One of the things that that I do a lot of, if I'm like, okay, I run with a group, and we've got all different levels of runners, as far as speed goes, and I'll just back off, and it's like, I'm going to do the tail end today, and I'll be just make sure I'm the last one, and it slows me down, if I keep so-and-so in front of me or stay with somebody, and that's an easy way to kind of slow it down if you have a group, get that opportunity.
But I would take one of your run days and turn them into a walk day.
Yeah.
You go out and run 45 minutes or 60 minutes on one day, walk it. Mm-hmm. In that 60 minutes of running, you're probably going to burn 400, 500, 600, 700 calories. Where if I walk it, I'm going to burn maybe 100 or 200.
Mm-hmm.
Much easier on your body. You're still getting out. You're still getting aerobic benefit. It's not as much.
Yeah.
But just moving gives you some aerobic benefit. Aerobic benefit really is pretty much anything you do that's not super strenuous,
mm-hmm.
is aerobic. It's going to have aerobic value.
Yep.
So it's not going to hurt you, but you're going to come out of it and be able to come out and work out the next day and have a lot less stress on the body.
Yep.
Especially like every other week, or, if you're running like 5 days a week, maybe like every second or third week, just run twice that week and walk the other 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give your body some time to rest.
Finding other things, like walking, but, even any kind of cross training, go trail, find a trail. It's beautiful out. The trails are open again, go somewhere different. We're bug spray though. Oh my God, the mosquitoes.
We've got chiggers in our yard that have been the big problem around here. Oof. It's very frustrating because I'm like always kind of grabbing your butt and your areas.
Your son like, the other day was cracking me up. I was like, what is he? Oh, chiggers.
Do you have to go to the bath? Oh no. Yeah.
He's like, no, jumping up and down.
I feel like I'm Michael Jackson grabbing my crotch every 2 seconds.
Wow, this is going south. All I said was mosquitoes if you're on the trails. But anyway, they go somewhere different. I'm going this weekend trail running. I'm going on an 8-mile trail run, but I'm going to drive about 2 hours to get there and 2 hours to get back, just to go somewhere different and see people, just as some, and I'm going to enjoy it immensely.
Go bike riding with someone who doesn't ride.
Ooh, that's a good one.
We went riding with my son. I was talking about that last week, mm-hmm. where we rode for an hour and 15 minutes and we covered 10 miles. We were averaging like 8 miles an hour. I got out and got some exercise. Yeah. It wasn't a ton. I got to ride my bike. I use it to work on some bike skills and stuff. And
right.
Just to have some fun with it and ride with other people who are new to the sport. And for him, yeah, it's great to see him complain about biking. It's like, oh, my butt hurts. My hands hurt. Who hasn't ridden that long before? And
yeah.
Kind of a new experience for him. And the distance side of it. Well, not really distance, but just length of time on the bike.
Well, now you can say, when he wants to come biking, well, I'm going to be gone about 3 hours. Remember what it felt like when you did that hour? Okay, I'll stay home.
There is some truth to that.
You can ride guilt-free now. Yay.
Well, that's another guy. Like I said, that's a good thing, is ride with people who don't ride normally, who are going to have like cruiser bikes and fitness bikes that can't mm-hmm. go fast and they can't ride fast. And it makes it a fun time that you're getting out and you're doing something. You're getting outside. You're getting a lot of the same benefits, but you're not really doing any wear and tear on your body at all.
Right.
Your joints aren't taking the pounding they take when you're going your normal speeds or doing the harder work.
Yep. Yeah, it's kind of sad right now because the person I've been riding with was a whole lot slower than me, and he's not anymore. So I'm getting harder bike rides. I need to start laying off a little bit. It's putting in a whole lot more effort than I used to all the time. So.
Yeah, he's a fairly strong.
Yeah, he wasn't a month ago. That's changed.
Well, no, he's just like physically, he's fairly strong. He's a...
Yeah. He wasn't 2 months ago.
He's a guy who kind of lifts weights and stuff. So he has a lot of inert strength in general. And now he's just getting the bike fitness to go with it.
Yep, it's no longer him way behind me on the hill. Things are starting to...
His endurance has gotten better. That's the problem. It's not that he wasn't strong before. It's just his endurance wasn't very good.
Yeah, so he didn't have the
cardio. He couldn't go hard for very long.
Yeah, that has changed, unfortunately for me.
Well, you have to send him on his way to ride with someone else.
Yeah. No, what I need to do is have him pull at the beginning instead of me, so I can take it easy the first half.
Well, yeah, because you have the tendency, I've ridden with you enough, that you go out way too hard.
Yeah.
And then you're dragging it to the backside of the ride.
Yep. That was the other day, until the thunderstorm came up. We did 47 miles. We hit about 35, and I was like, oh, I made a mistake. I was pretty well tanked. I'm like, you're in front now. And then we hit the storm, and I kind of get a second wind, that's for sure.
Yeah, if you've ever wondered when we ride together, why in that first like 15, 20, 30 minutes I end up behind you, yeah, it's because I'm like, huh, I don't want to ride this hard. I'm going to duck in behind and wait. We'll ride harder a little bit once I warm up some and get ready to go.
I'm still learning. It always changes. But yeah, learning how to back off, to take, you know, do things that are different, ride with people that are slower, run with people that are slower, walk with your kids, walk with somebody else's kids. All kinds of parents.
Just make sure you know them.
Yeah. Make sure that, yeah.
Yeah, I just wouldn't go out to the street randomly like, hey, let's go for a walk.
Yeah, you're going to walk with your kid. No, don't do that. Don't do that. Please don't do that. I might be able to get away with it a little easier than you.
Good times.
Just do yoga, you know, learn how to stretch. That's like one thing that I totally fall down on. And
what's stretching?
Yeah, exactly. You too, huh?
You talk about this thing. I've heard of this thing called yoga. Not sure what it is.
Working on balance, and those are all good things to do. That it's not the same kind of workout for sure, but it's just as benefit. It really is.
It creates longevity in the sport. When you're newer to the sport, you can kind of get by on a lot of different things. But after you've been in the sport for a while, you're much more susceptible to potentially overtraining and injuries a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Newer people are susceptible to it from a standpoint of injuries, of getting into something too quickly.
Right.
Once you've been into it for a while, that's a little bit less of a problem. It's more of a, you do it for long enough, you get injuries that are just overuse injuries.
Mm-hmm.
From, you've done it for 5 years, you've never taken a break. The body eventually breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you begin to run into the more that, like you're talking about, the psychological side of it, where you become depressed, you become despondent. I mean, and you see this. I've seen this in people. Like, I got to believe this race is going to happen because it gives me something to train for, rather than just training to train.
Mm-hmm.
The psychological effects of that are pretty brutal. It's interesting to see how that kind of plays out, and that leads into the overtraining and the plateauing, and now I'm when I don't work out I get this depression, but I'm working out, I don't know why I'm working out.
Right, I don't really want to anymore, but I'm still
sometimes,
but what,
yeah,
if that race is going to happen, and can be an endless cycle right now.
It's a very challenging time because you don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know when it's going to return to normal.
Right.
At this point, it's going to return to normal. It's just a matter of when is that going to be?
Yeah.
Is that 3 months from now or 2 years from now? God, I hope not.
Stop that.
At the end of the day, yeah, with all this uncertainty, people just train and train and train, and that's where you run into the overtraining. And we're starting to see it more and more. The people that are, mm-hmm, just overtrained, they're training too much and for too long with no purpose.
Well, and part of it, you know, it's sort of the races keep getting delayed and delayed and delayed. So people are, it's like, you know, they've built up for this race. And, oh, nope, now you get another 2 months. And, oh, nope, now you get another
Well, that's
2 months,
not completely true at this point, because like age group nationals, which was going to be my peak race, they finally canceled last week.
They finally did.
The youth championships, which happened in Ohio at the site of the Mojo Triathlon, they canceled.
They canceled.
I'm guessing the Mojo probably won't go off either.
Yeah, I haven't looked recently to see, because that was going to be the week before Nationals.
Right, that's when...
August 8th, I think.
Which is like the week after the Junior Nationals,
mm-hmm,
which happens in the same park.
But it's a small, much smaller race, so it may...
Well, Junior Nationals is a small race, too.
Oh.
Junior Nationals is like 30 kids.
Oh, really?
In a couple different age groups. Yeah, it's like premium elite. They go off a...
Well, they probably canceled because not everybody's had a chance to train.
I don't
in
know.
Different areas. I mean, if it's nationals, then...
They actually go off the pontoon. It's actually cool to watch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
that's an interesting thing when they go off the pontoons.
Are they diving or they got to jump?
No, you dive in.
Okay.
From the pontoon. The what makes it crazy, though, if you don't get the time of the jump right, you just do a belly flop. Because the dock moves.
Because it's moving. Ooh.
So when the gun goes off, you'd better be moving. If you are a half a second slow, the dock moves and you just kind of like belly flop in. You don't get the
wow,
full
effect
of the dive.
Wow, that'd be an interesting one to practice. Huh.
I don't know how you practice that.
Yeah.
Wow. It's one of those interesting aspects of the draft legal elite races is they go off on a gun on a dock. They might have a couple waves, but it's the races are usually limited to like 30 competitors. Now they do have like the day after they have the junior championship that's not draft legal.
Okay.
That's kind of open to anybody. You just kind of show up and
kind of
race.
Like Nationals does the sprint.
Kind of similar to that.
Anybody,
you can just kind of show up and participate
mm-hmm.
for juniors.
Okay.
But the actual championship's all draft legal, and it's under the rules, if you get passed, you're done.
Really?
If you get lapped on the bike, you're done, because it's four or five loops through the park. It's all closed.
Wow.
And if you get lapped, you're done. You get pulled off the course.
Oh, wow.
Same thing with running. It's all...
That's interesting. Wow.
It's for safety reasons.
Yeah. Because
they can't have you... It's all open, so they can't have you running, riding your bike to the transition area while people are running through.
Yeah, that's true. That would.
That's why they pull you off the course once you get lapped.
Huh.
But yeah, juniors is done. Age group nationals are done. Apparently, though, supposedly the Muncie Ironman's going off.
And when's that? October?
Next month, I believe.
Oh, really?
Up in Indiana.
Huh.
Personally, you probably can find races. I don't really want to race in a world where you have to socially distance to race. That just doesn't seem interesting to me. And although you're going to have plenty of room in the transition areas.
Yeah, yeah.
You won't have to worry about having... You know, someone right next to you on a bike.
Nobody's
going to
be knocking off your stuff.
No one's going to be knocking off your stuff. It's weird. I'm just waiting. Like I said, it'll all come back to normal at some point in time.
July 11th, Prairie Creek Reservoir.
It's an isolated place.
Oh, registration's unavailable.
Is it still going to run?
No.
They may not have canceled it yet.
Yeah, no.
A lot of races are getting canceled.
I'm on the active.com site.
The only race I know, there's a race by the Team Magic people that's going on in Alabama in like next month.
Okay.
But I don't know of any of their other races. Because like Chattanooga hasn't canceled yet. That comes up at some point. A lot of the races just haven't canceled, but I'm not sure they've gotten the go-ahead either.
Yeah, yeah.
From the local officials.
Just kind of in limbo. I mean, even the race that I'm organizing in October is we're going forward with our plans, but we'll have to make a decision when it comes time to order medals. That'll be...
Yeah, I mean, once you have to order shirts and medals, you don't want to do that before...
Yeah, no.
You're going to have to make a decision before you have to start spending money on the race.
Right.
Real money, at least.
Yeah.
You know, there's some planning time. There's money for that. I'm sure you're probably paying some fee to... active.com or whoever you're registering races through.
Yeah.
They take their cut.
Well, yeah, it comes through the registrations.
Well, unless you have to give your money back.
We have to give the money back. Yeah.
You're out that fee.
Yeah.
But once you have to like start plopping money down for medals and awards and stuff like that, that actually a good chunk of money is necessary, especially shirts. Because
yes.
That gets expensive.
That does get.
Especially if you have 500 people in a race. Yeah, you don't $3,000 or $4,000 on something and not have a race.
Yeah, Muncie appears to still be on, according to their website, and still register.
When's that supposed to run?
July 11th.
July 11th. So it's soon.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't been shut down yet. So that one may actually run because we're at 2 weeks away.
Yeah.
But they're going to. I wonder what all the social distancing rules and stuff for that one is going to be.
They don't say a whole lot on here.
No, you can find it. I know it's a lot of self-aid. They're not going to really have like the aid stations and
right.
things of that nature.
Interesting. Well, don't overtrain for this, folks, because, you know, very well.
Well, yeah, because the other part of this is you're going to have people that are going to be scrambling to try to get into these races
mm-hmm.
and race. They didn't think there were going to be races, and now you're scrambling. That can lead to overtraining as well.
Right.
Because you're trying to cram in what should take 15 weeks into 5.
Yeah. Yep.
So be careful when you're out there and you're wanting to race this year and you find that race that's 5 weeks from now and you...
Do it for fun. Just go for fun. Don't go for time. This is not the year.
Yeah, but that's like asking people not to breathe.
True. True. Well, good luck, everybody. Take care of yourselves. And if you're feeling like you don't want to run or bike or swim, don't. Take a break. Find something new to do. Be careful. Take care of yourselves.
Yep. Take some time down. Make sure you take some time down and do some different things that are not stressing the body as hard.
Yep. Or your brain, too.
Well, now that we're able to swim again, start swimming more.
Yay!
Burn your arms out.
I don't know how warm the river is. I haven't checked. I think it was...
the big problem with swimming is that you need to go about that slowly, too, so you don't, like, tear something in your arm.
Oh, God.
Your shoulder.
Oh, God. We swam for the first time last week, on Tuesday? Wednesday, I could not lift my arms. I was like, oh, my God, it was an hour. Not even. I was in the pool 45 minutes, and I was like, wait, what's wrong? Oh, God.
Yeah, I got to start cleaning up my stroke because I can feel some soreness when I'm swimming in my shoulder where you're just not used to some of those stresses.
Yeah.
Which mine means I'm probably doing something wrong.
Mine was the pull down. I was like, holy cow, I haven't had to use those, you know, the tricep muscles in that way for
it's the lats
several
and stuff,
months. Yeah. Well, it wasn't shoulders. It was arms.
Yeah, well, your arms get tired too, but the lat's the big pull muscle.
Yeah, it was weird. I was like, okay, I haven't done this for a while. So anyway, be careful, everybody. And if you're looking for a coach to help you out, check out go3sport.com and have an awesome day.